WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. The U.S. Supreme Court strikes down a ban on bump stocks, which allows a shooter to quickly fire a semi-automatic rifle. The ban was enacted after the 2017 Las Vegas mass shooting. Reaction from Vice President Kamala Harris.
What the court did today is really rolling back what otherwise is important progress to be made to prevent gun violence in America.
Alex Jones must sell his assets to pay more than $1 billion in a defamation case tied to the mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in 2012, which he called a hoax.
These people want me silenced. It is completely and totally transparent, and the world is seeing through this.
As the water begins receding in South Florida after record rainfall, Governor Ron DeSantis tells residents,
"We've got a lot of resources staged here, and we'll be able to offer the state's assistance as is requested by the local communities."
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Civic Media News, I'm Ella Sapp. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Mercury Marine is laying off 252 workers in Fond du Lac and making what it calls workforce adjustments at its other facilities. The job cuts will happen on July 26th. The company blames low sales. Mercury Marine is the biggest employer in Fond du Lac County. A U.S. police officer on January 6th says Donald Trump is unfit to be president. Harry Dunn is now campaigning for President Biden. He tells Civic Media's Earl Ingram that Trump's recent felony convictions should also disqualify him.
As a convicted felon, he's no longer able to possess firearms, but that's all right. He has the code to the nuclear weapon. Another individual may be disqualified from a job because they're a felon. He's now running on the fact that he is convicted.
Dunn campaigned for Biden in Madison on Thursday and Eau Claire on Friday. And that's what you need to know. I'm Ella Saff, and this is Civic Media News.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Brian, do you buy your tickets on Ticketmaster?
Whether I want to or not, I do.
Bella DeVan. We're going to talk a little bit about monopolies.
Live Nation and Ticketmaster together control 80% of the primary ticketing market. They have the market power to bully people into submission. And then you trap consumers into basically having to pay like junk fees that are basically created to create profit for the company.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley's home for The Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is The Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Had a very interesting conversation today with an old friend who is concerned about November. And rightly so. Look, we're in a moment where one election could be the end of our this great experiment. The idea of self-governance, the idea of we the people having some say in our government, and moving towards a more authoritarian, fascistic form of government. And understand, I do believe Donald Trump is a fascist kind of guy. I think he's an authoritarian guy who wants to be, well, king. I truly believe that. And I know a lot of other people who do as well and are concerned. Now, what I find interesting are the media reports and all of the, you know, the blather that this friend of mine was throwing up as, you know, Joe Biden's going to lose. Look, I don't know that he's going to win. I have my concerns. But the news media is feeding into this narrative that, you know, young people, Gen Z is moving away. You know, Biden's losing the Gen Z influencers. You know, he's losing the college dudes. He's losing the category that makes up the Democratic coalition. He's losing minority voters. He's losing Hispanic voters. He's losing Black voters. I generally don't pay much attention to polling until after Labor Day. because most people really aren't paying attention. It's only political junkies, people like me, who are engaged year round. Most people have lives. Most people, you know, they'll tune in, they'll participate here in the program, and then they've got other things to do. So as I was having this conversation with this friend, he's throwing out all of these, you know, the Gen Z's worried about the climate. I go, yeah, me too. Gen Z's worried about what's going on overseas with the wars, and, you know, if they're going to get pulled into World War III. And I go, yeah, I don't want World War III either. You know, he wants to ban TikTok. I'm going, you lost me. You had me. You had me at, you know, potentially World War III, the end of humanity, because the climate is changing, could wipe us all out. Look, the planet will be fine. The planet will exist. The planet will go forward with just without us. The planet, it'll be okay. You know, there'll be stuff growing here. It might not be us. But when he got to the TikTok thing, I guess this is one of those things that I'm just kind of, I'm struggling with. Because, you know, my mind goes, do I want that direct, you know, mainline IV of propaganda and you know, grooming, I guess. Let's go with grooming. Do I want the Chinese Communist government to have access directly to my child's brain? And the answer is no, I don't. But to have, you know, my friend who's, you know, right around my age, think that this was going to be the undoing of the administration, that the president is supporting the idea of a TikTok ban. This was the bridge too far, you think, for young people? Understand, as we go through this process, people are going to be angry. You don't always get what you want out of a candidate. Look, there's been a couple of things I'm not thrilled with Biden on. But for the most part, like 90% of it, aces. You know, as to be honest, you know, probably agree with him more than I've agreed with any politician of my lifetime, because he's done the right things on reshoring manufacturing, investing in infrastructure, strengthening labor protections where he can. So those things I'm all on board on, absolutely. And I think when working people sit down and look at the record, when people take the moment and the time, and I think this is going to happen around after Labor Day, when they take a look at the two of them, I don't think it's going to be, I truly don't think it's going to be that hard to decide. And in talking with my labor friends, I say, look, you know, put the personality aside. Because look, I find Trump somewhat entertaining. I think he's losing it a little bit. I think he's narcissistic, and you go down the list of all of the things that the shrinks have thrown out. Yeah, absolutely. But when you come back to the policies, because again, he's got a record. He was president for 4 years. He did stuff. And none of it helped working people. And when his tax cuts expire for working people, but not for corporate America and the very wealthy, that's going to have an effect as well. So, you know, to my friends who are all, and I've had a lot of these folks, the sky's falling, you know, we got to change ships. It's not going to happen. It's going to be Biden and Trump. Those are going to be the two candidates. And you say, can't we do better? And, you know, no, not in this moment. This is what we've got. So this idea of, you know, we're going to play this game of, you know, if I had other choices, you don't. You got two choices. You've got, you know, Biden, who has done, I think, a great job to this point, or Trump, who led us into a, you know, pretty sizable pandemic, and then all of the things that have come after that. You know what's interesting to me? I have people saying, you know, Joe Biden did all this inflation stuff. Never do they blame Donald Trump. And understand, Trump deficit spent like $7.5 trillion. You know, responsible for, you know, what is it, a quarter of our national debt? One guy, 4 years? That's a bit much. How come we don't say, you know, Donald Trump did this? And I know it's easy to say, well, you know, the buck stops at the president's desk and Joe Biden's the president, so it stops there. Here's my prediction. If Trump were to win The day he takes office, you know, Fox News and the rest of them are going to be saying this is the greatest economy that there's ever been. You know, wages are up. Savings are up. Inflation's coming down. We're building stuff. Unemployment's at historic lows. Go across the divide of humanity. We're moving in the right direction. But since we have a right-wing media in this country, a billionaire class media, a corporate media, clearly the guy who's trying to help working people can't be succeeding. So we got to make it sound like, oh my God, the sky is falling. And this is where I calm down. As the campaign ramps up, I think once you see the difference between the two, outside of the fact that, you know, 34 felonies and all the other stuff that goes with it, I think it'll become very clear, that Joe Biden gets four more years to continue the work he's been doing and moving us in a good direction. It's my thoughts. When we come back, Craig Harrington from Media Matters is going to be here to share some thoughts on the how the news media has handled Donald Trump and his triumphant return to Washington. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I got to tell you, just when I thought I had seen everything, Tucker Carlson says, oh no, I've got more. Evidently, he had this Dr. Gary Nolan on his, I don't know if it's an X feed, his podcast, whatever he's doing now. But evidently, Dr. Nolan says aliens are actually real. And they're avatars. I think he said biological robots that are meant to look like us. Because hey, if you were going to go down on a planet with a bunch of angry monkeys who might kill you, you might have to send biological robots. Now that is hard hitting journalism right there, my friends. That's the secret sauce. Crazy, at least. But here to share some thoughts on what our mainstream corporate-controlled media is feeding us, I've asked our good friend Craig Harrington to come talk with us. Craig is the research director over at Media Matters. Craig, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thank you. Though I have told the CIA I would not comment on the veracity of the biological robots. So,
yeah, and look, the weird thing is, you know, this is I guess it's a story now. But hey, look, you know, it might as well be when you look at the headlines from Thursday as Donald Trump was going to Capitol Hill to meet with Senate Republicans and House Republicans. I looked at the Reuters headlines, Republicans hope for unity message in Trump visit to Congress. And then the Associated Press, they put out Donald Trump made a triumphant return to Capitol Hill on Thursday when in his first with lawmakers since January 6th attack, embraced by energized House and Senate Republicans. They find themselves reinvigorated by his bid to retake the White House. Do you know they've never used the word triumphant in anything to talk about Joe Biden?
I don't find that surprising. A number of my friends and colleagues actually commented on that Associated Press headline and tweet specifically. Brian Beutler, who's an independent journalist, wrote, "Did Donald Trump write this tweet?"
Because, no, it wasn't in all caps.
Yeah, it couldn't have possibly been more over the top. The degree to which the Associated Press has fully whitewashed the circumstances around why Donald Trump hasn't been in the Capitol since January 6, 2021 is astounding. But of course, it wasn't just those headlines. You know, Senator Roger Marshall was later on Fox News, and he was talking about how strong Donald Trump was and how vigorous and vibrant he was. The way they talk about it, it's very difficult to argue that it's not a cult when you listen to how members of the cult talk about the cult leader. It's shocking.
And the sad reality is, you know, we've got a media structure in this country that's normalizing the fact that we have a convicted felon at the top of the Republican Party ticket. A guy who the first in the history of our country to not have a peaceful transfer of power, to not, you know, concede a loss that everyone knows he lost. It's remarkable that how they've all just fallen right into line in our media structure right there with them.
Yeah, and one of the most troubling things that we continue to see from particularly from mainstream outlets, from the legacy outlets that are most trusted, particularly that are most trusted by persuadable, reachable viewers and voters. The mainstream outlets continue to sort of play both sides of this coin. A good example of this, the New York Times had an article about, I don't know, how strange Mayor Eric Adams of New York City is, and some of the behaviors that he's done that are crude or boorish, commenting on people's looks. And this is an article about Eric Adams. He's their mayor. It doesn't have to, it could just be about Eric Adams.
Right.
And in the same paragraph where they talk about Eric Adams' behavior toward women, they say, well, but he's not the only politician who's made comments about people's appearance. Joe Biden's made comments about people's appearance, and they hyperlink to, I don't know, a time he told twin brothers that they need to watch out for their little sister or something. And then they say, and Donald Trump has also made comments about people's appearance, including defaming E. Jean Carroll numerous times, who a jury found him liable for sexually assaulting. Why are we playing both sides of this? The sentence was written as if Jonathan Van Last, who is at the Bulwark, which is another independent news organization, he had a comment about that said, the sentence structure was as if it had been written between the two of them. Joe Biden and Donald Trump both have 34 felony convictions.
Right.
And yeah, that's true. Between the two of them, they do 34 for one and zero for the other. But we continue to see this sort of this balancing and this very intentional effort from mainstream outlets to kind of whitewash and sand down the edges of Trump, to balance the way that they frame and discuss the aberrance of his presidency and his post-presidency. And it hasn't gotten better. It's only gotten worse. Fortunately, there's only 6 months to go in the election. But unfortunately, there are only 6 months left to go for the media to actually improve on these dynamics and do better. And one of the reasons that we're talking here tonight is because of the fact that there are so many instances, including recent instances, where the media are really dropping the ball. A perfect example of this, a week ago, ProPublica on June 3rd published a report noticing some of the odd financial benefits that were showing up in the financial disclosures of the Trump Organization, specifically referencing individuals who were potentially material parties to his criminal proceedings, either in the Trump Organization's criminal fraud case or in Trump's own individual criminal proceedings. And these numerous people who were on the payroll of the Trump Organization suddenly got big, lavish benefits or bonuses. Some people even saw their pay rates double after they were included in reporting or they came up and mentioned in court proceedings for being parties to any number of criminal behaviors from Trump or from his organization. And so people, including Boris Epstein and Alan Weisselberg, these are individuals who got pay raises after they became material witnesses into criminal investigations of Trump, his children, and his business. And no one else is talking about this. ProPublica published this on June 3rd. It got significant attention on MSNBC for a few days, a little bit on CNN, completely buried by Fox. It was completely unmentioned in the first 3 days on the major broadcast evening news. And it was uncovered by the newspapers as well, which often don't like to boost reporting from outside groups like ProPublica because it scoops them on something that was important that they decided not to pursue or that they didn't know about until someone else already published the scoop.
Or
and so this
yet,
huge story just went nowhere.
Or worse yet, they've known about it for a long time and didn't publish it either. I mean, I look at the Alito thing. That, you know, the Washington Post had that story a couple of years ago. Not important. There's a bunch of that stuff that goes on that our mainstream corporate controlled media doesn't think we need to know that kind of stuff. I'm not surprised. And, you know, as I was reading through some of that, my mind went to Michael Cohen. Had Michael Cohen just kept his mouth shut, he could have gotten one of those bonuses.
Yeah, and he's actually talked about that. He talked about that. I don't know if it was part of his testimony, but it has been part of part of the conversation that he's had. He has a podcast, of course, like Michael Cohen. You can't get that guy off of media. He's as talkative as anyone. And he's talked about this numerous times. He was driven to the brink financially. And of course, he went to prison for his involvement in this conspiracy that Donald Trump was just convicted on 34 counts for his own party to. But Michael Cohen has talked about the fact that if he had just sort of swallowed his pride and ignored his patriotism and ignored what he felt was what he owed to his family, he could have been very well compensated for his silence in a way that it seems other members of the Trump orbit have been.
Yeah.
And of course, it's not just unseemly to pay off an employee who was potentially party to a crime or who may be able to provide evidence against you. It's a crime.
It's illegal. It's a crime. Those are more felonies.
But what it requires is a prosecution that is willing to do the diligence and a team that has the time and the resources to build another case. It's very unlikely that, you know, this case would come up again in, say, New York City under DA Alvin Bragg, who already spent 2 years of time prosecuting this Trump case. And so it's a crime, potentially, that is just kind of reported. It's in the news. There's some evidence for it. There's enough for ProPublica to find. There is enough that a prosecutor could find. But we don't know what will happen with it. Yeah. What we do know is that it is a story that is worthy of mass attention. It is a story that would be the defining scandal for every other politician in American history. But since June 3rd, when that story came out, you have probably read 50 or 100 times as many comments about Hunter Biden as you've read about this potential criminal conspiracy that ProPublica uncovered. And that's a real problem. And that's a problem with the media. And it's also a problem with how we are able to even consume news. You know, if you're not someone who watches MSNBC, if you didn't catch their, I think we graded 17 minutes of coverage over 2 days. If you didn't see that, this was nowhere.
Yeah. But here, the thing is, you know, as you're talking about this, my mind goes to some of my red hat friends who are all in the Trump camp. And they would say, well, that's just smart business. You know, you get in there, you know, use your resources to help with the outcome. It's just to use a Trump frame. It's smart.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine these are the same people who would argue that it would be totally appropriate for a management or a business to do the same if their work, if their employees tried to unionize. Well, you could buy off a couple of them. It's illegal if you get caught, if someone reports it. But if you don't get caught, it could potentially be very, very profitable for you to avoid, you know, that worker organization. There's a reason that companies do this, and there's a reason that it is illegal because it can absolutely influence people. And if that can work with unionization efforts, then it can absolutely work with, you know, a criminal investigation into a former and potentially future president of the United States.
Yeah, but you know, here's the thing: we know he does a lot of shady things. Does this surprise anyone? I mean, there's been some stories lately of, you know, the fact that he's paying his legal bills through campaign money. Evidently, there's a loophole that allows him to pay his legal bills. I'm not sure what that is. He's also evidently using his private, you know, his jet like a charter service. He's making millions of dollars off of, you know, carting Secret Service agents around that are there to protect him. I mean, it's quite remarkable that he's figured out how to monetize for himself what other candidates have gone into debt over.
I once have described this, and I saw someone else describe it, and I sort of adopted this. Donald Trump has a real skill for finding penny ante schemes to enrich himself. And think about this. When he was the president of the United States, he was ostensibly the most powerful man in the world. He wasn't doing it himself. We don't have any evidence that he was touching this. But his Air Force Department was rerouting European transport overflights that would normally stop over at a U.S. joint air base in the north of Great Britain, in Scotland. And those airmen who had always stayed at a certain hotel for years and years, all of a sudden started driving over an hour out of their way and staying at Trump's Turnberry golf course. And so what we were literally seeing was the president of the United States, through various intermediaries on down to the Secretary of the Air Force, scheming to make a couple of hundred bucks a night from airmen who were then getting their receipts recompensated by the Department of Defense. Like, the man had the nuclear codes, and he was directing people to buy rooms at his hotel down the street and to stay at his hotels and golf courses. He was charging the Secret Service, as you talked about earlier. He's still charging them to fly in his private jet as he forces them to travel around the country with him. He was charging them to stay in his building in Trump Tower in New York. He was charging them to stay in Mar-a-Lago. He was doing massive upgrades to his facilities, adding security to those facilities, and then charging the taxpayer for them for, you know, tens of thousands here, hundreds of thousands of there. It really adds up in the grand scheme. But at the end of the day, this man was a billionaire.
Yeah.
When the House investigated this, they found that he got, I think it was $4.2 or $7.2 million in foreign money during his time in office. $7 million or so was directed into his companies by foreign government interests. That's a tiny amount of money for a billionaire, and yet he was still willing to do this because there's nothing he won't chase. Remember Spy magazine in the 1990s used to send him increasingly smaller checks just to see what wasn't worth his effort. And I believe that the smallest check he cashed was the smallest one they sent, and I believe it was for 11 cents. And a billionaire took time out of his day.
How do you think he got to be a billionaire, Craig? Every 11 cents counts.
11 cents at a time.
Every 11 cents counts. But here's the thing, and this is where we've known all this stuff for years. None of this stuff should be new to anyone who's been paying attention. All this stuff came out in 2015 and 2016. And for those of us who used to listen to Howard Stern when he used to come on, this is who he's always been. So it's not shocking to me. What is shocking to me, and this is where I want to wrap things up, what is shocking to me is the Republican Party has fallen directly into line behind him. And when there are voices, and I don't like Paul Ryan at all, but when Paul Ryan comes out and says, I'm not voting for the guy, breaks it on Fox News, and you never hear from it again, there's kind of a Liz Cheney, another one. Don't like Liz Cheney, but got to give her credit. You know, in this day and age, she's a hero now.
Yeah. Trump's own vice president went on Fox News last year and said that he would not support Donald Trump in his bid for the presidency. Fox had that as an exclusive. They aired it. I believe it was on Special Report. They gave it the full interview treatment and then never talked about it again. What just happened with Paul Ryan 2 days ago on Your World with Neil Cavuto. Neil Cavuto is one of Fox News' senior vice presidents, and he's one of the few kind of like journalist-y people at Fox. He's very biased, but he's also kind of serious about his news business. He's interviewing Paul Ryan, Trump's former Republican Secretary of State during the Trump administration. And Paul Ryan says that because of Trump's character flaws, because he doesn't have he's unfit to be president. Those were Paul Ryan's words. He's not going to vote for him. That was on Fox's air, and it was never mentioned again, except in jest later that evening when one of their other hosts was mocking Paul Ryan for it. I mean, the man's simply unfit to be president. His own vice president, his own speaker say this. And unless you're watching for the handful of seconds that they were on Fox News talking about it, it does not break into the echo chamber.
No, and it's not just Paul Ryan. It's just not Mike Pence. It's just not. You go down the list of all the very best people who made up his cabinet. And I think I saw something like, you know, like 90% of them are voting against him. Very best people. Remember, they're the very best people. And those very best people have looked at Trump and said exactly what you said a minute ago. Lots of character flaws. This isn't a guy who should be anywhere near the White House. And they're voting against him.
Yeah. And it's interesting, actually, most of the more senior people haven't yet said who they plan to vote for in 2020. John Bolton said he was going to vote for Dick Cheney. He was going to write him in. But most of them haven't said that they'll actually support Biden, which is another problem that is causing it not to break through the echo chamber. When people are protest voting for write-ins, there's very little reason for the media to follow and cover John Bolton voting for Dick Cheney.
Yeah.
But it would have made a massive story. It would have been a huge splash if he had just had the courage to say he was going to vote for Joe Biden, you know, like a guy who isn't going to nuke Iran,
Not going to nuke a hurricane. No, I'm with you. But the question is would we hear it? I mean, if our mainstream media is not going to pick it up, Fox News sure isn't going to run with Bolton voting for Biden. Do we get to hear it? And this is where I think the work that you guys do is so important, and other outlets to try and get through the fog. So I give you guys credit, but it's amazing to me and something we got to work on. But Craig, as always, I appreciate you taking a little time for us. Good stuff. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you for your time.
Want to hear your thoughts. Did you hear any of that anywhere else? Did you hear Paul Ryan saying he wasn't going to? You heard about, you heard about Mitch McConnell. He's voting for him. You heard a lot of that. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back.
This is 93.5 The Tap. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy tonight to a low in the upper 50s. Showers around tomorrow, rumbles of thunder, and a high in the mid-70s. Heating up Sunday and humid, high in the upper 80s, maybe a late-day storm. Another round of showers and storms Sunday night into Monday. Currently, it's 66.
Nightline with Pete Schwabba.
What is the worst movie franchise? Do you have one, Conrad?
What are your thoughts on Transformers?
I saw one Transformer movie. I think it was the first one. I didn't even know what the hell was going on.
I can't get into them anymore because, it's the same every movie now.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be nice if you knew which Transformer. I know there's testosterone and overload and whatever testosterone.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I got to tell you, I love the reporting coming out about Trump going to Capitol Hill on Thursday to meet with Senate Republicans and House Republicans. And all the stories that the fun, the entertainment that came out of it. Evidently, Trump and Mitch McConnell, they shook hands. Evidently, one of the sources who was in the House meeting with Trump and the Republicans said it was like talking to your drunk uncle at a family reunion. But that's not what you got from the media. Not at all. In fact, it was supposedly a moment of unity and togetherness. And here to share some thoughts on the big meeting, maybe what was talked about, what the Republicans vowed to do, what the cult decided they were going to get behind. I've asked our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst Bob Ney to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So what do you make of McConnell and Trump shaking hands? It was evidently, some of the statements I've heard from McConnell, he wouldn't even say Trump's name. He would say he's going to support him, but he didn't say his name. Surprised that they shook hands?
Well, I served with Mitch McConnell 11 years. He was my prime sponsor, he and Chris Dodd of the Help America Vote Act. So I worked with him. And, he at one time was the sharp political guy. And he is a survivor to the day he walks out of there or
they carry him out.
He leaves. And the thing is that McConnell wants to leave winning control. So he'll put things aside. Trump would be less in the political system to understand you do that. Trump would be more combative technically, but McConnell will put things aside. He wants to win. Of course, Trump went to Capitol Hill wanting unity. I think part of it was to just reaffirm himself with people, but I think part of it had to be the campaign structure, Rick, saying, go there, maybe it'll kind of quiet the House down, because if, Marjorie Taylor Three Names and others continue what they're doing, they got involved in primary races, they lost a lot of them, circular firing squad stuff. If they continue that, they're going to lose, and also you potentially hurt Trump in the election. I saw the most bizarre story. I think it was The Examiner, which said, here are the four ways that the Republicans have failed Donald Trump in the House.
I saw this.
Didn't impeach Biden. Oh, yeah. That would have really helped everybody's campaign if you're Republican, wouldn't it? That would have been a nightmare. Didn't impeach Mayorkas. You know, went down through these four things. Didn't defund Smith, which would be in the middle of a process, whether they like it or not. Didn't, you know, defund Smith. And then there was a fourth ridiculous one I didn't even pay attention to.
Yeah, I mean, it just gets crazier and crazier on down the line. But, you know, there are people who believe this stuff. And understand, I wanted the Republicans to impeach Biden. Go, please bring what you've got. And, you know, time and time again, they've built this up. We've got the smoking gun, only no, not so much. Built it up. No, not so much. You know, they're the party that's cried wolf so many times that even if Biden did something that was impeachment worthy, I don't think anyone would buy it.
Right. Well, part of the problem with the Hill, too, is they've gotten into this usual investigation fever. Investigate this, investigate that. Congress loves to get in the middle of anything. And of course, they're completely wrapped up in foreign affairs, a lot of the House and Senate, whether it's Ukraine, Israel, whatever they're wrapped up in, which are legitimate issues. But there are other issues you've got to steer towards. Everybody knows that. And they just keep doing the whole chaos and drama. So, you know, it's not like the usual days where you kind of get a hold of a mantra, but now it's, you know, steal the election stolen. Was January 6th tourists or were they terrorists? I mean, all of these things are just regurgitated over and over. And I'll tell you, Rick, you know, I was driving my car today and I was just thinking for a second and I thought, I'm looking at, you know, a lot of the people on the Hill and of course Trump. And I'm thinking, what are they talking about that affects my family and I? What are they talking about?
Nothing.
Nothing. And I was just stunned today thinking about that because I ran for 11 years. I ran for 25 years in different races. And you talk about wallet issues or what affects the family, you know, the budget, how things are distributed, all those types of things, the government, whether you expand it or you don't. But now it's just kind of the same old war mantra. Internal firing squads, I call them, with the Republicans, Marjorie Taylor, three names, the whole nine yards.
No, and you know, look, you know, the Republicans control the House. They could pass through a bunch of messaging bills. They're not going to get through the Senate because virtually nothing does these days. But they could say, "These are our values. This is our policy position. This is why you should vote for us in November." We're not even seeing that stuff come out.
That and also. Of course, both parties let their guard down on this one, but the seat that I used to have, that was the 18th congressional, it's been recarved and it's the 6th, but the vast majority of it, land-wise, is Belmont, Jefferson counties, where I lived in the area downriver. Then you've got Youngstown, of course, you're an Ohioan from Cleveland, so you know where Youngstown is, and you've got that part of it. Rooley won the primary, he was a state senator, and he won by 10 points, but there was a underfunded Democrat that ran, and Trump had won that district by 30 points. Now, some of the media is building it up. I don't think Rooley's going to lose in the fall, but here's the point, though. The parties were asleep at the switch. If the Democrat Party, which they knew there was some polling showing bad turnout, abysmal turnout, they could have probably come close to maybe taking this seat, which would have been, you know, a big, big deal. And the Republicans were asleep at the switch of not realizing it was closer than it should be. So I'm looking at all this and I wonder, what do they concentrate on? What are they really looking at?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good question. And the answer is, I don't think anyone knows. I don't even think they know.
Right.
No, it's. And I think a part of this also is that Trump sucks so much oxygen out of the room. I mean, I think that's part of this as well.
No question about it. You know, I started with Ellen Ratner, as you know, about 14 years ago on radio. And used to be you would have to get up in the morning until 2016 and after. You would have to get up in the morning. You would research this, research that. Yes, there were articles on Bush and Obama. I'm not denying that. But once Trump came in, the whole frenzy, and the more he attacked the media, the more they really paid attention to him. And that whole frenzy, I mean, it's just, it's Trump, Trump, Trump. And you're right. He just, you know, sucks the air out of the room. And he's not somebody that was around the political system much. Yeah, he was a donor, but he wasn't somebody that was active in it, how the system, you know, operates. Now, some people say, well, that's great. He's breaking the system up. Well, you still have to make the trains run. And so it just becomes a lot of drama and theater, which if he wins again, will he do drama and theater? Will we hear steal the election for 4 years?
Yes. I think we know the answer to that.
Election, yes.
I think we know what his presidency will be. It will be all about revenge and retribution, and he's going to go get the, you name it. He's going to lock them all up. I think we know that. But, you know, while he was, you know, having the meeting, there were some stories that came out. Evidently, you know, said that Milwaukee's a horrible place, where the RNC convention's going to be. Had some weird kind of musing about a relationship or a romantic relationship with Nancy Pelosi. I mean, to be honest, how come our media doesn't focus on the fact that this guy seems to be losing his marbles?
Well, I know a couple of shows will talk about it, but it's just sort of, I mean, don't you think that in a way a lot of people have been like immune, I mean, or numb?
Yeah.
I don't know what word I'm looking for, but maybe numb and immune. It's like, oh, okay. Somebody else says that, they're going to get butchered, but it's like, oh, well, okay. Yeah, what's new? You know. I mean, Trump's the type of guy you could play a tape.
Yeah.
Of him saying something, and he'd be like, "No, it was perfect what I said."
And I'm sure that the people who he said it to will have believed that it was perfect. That's the weirdest thing. I got to get your thoughts on the January 6th. You know, I know the Trump folks call them hostages, but the criminals who you know, destroyed our Capitol. About $3 million worth of damage. There was a report that said only about 15%. Of that money has been paid back through restitution, as hundreds of the offenders, you know, pled guilty. You know, they were supposed to, or were found guilty. We're supposed to pay this back. Only about 15% of it's gotten paid back so far.
Well, look, I was in charge of House administration. We oversaw every aspect of the House, including, you know, the rooms, the furniture. There are some things in the House that are priceless. And if they are tampered with or destroyed, it takes an extreme amount of money, you know, to reproduce or to redo a lot of the, what I'll call artifacts,
yeah,
you know, in our Capitol. So they did extensive damage. Now, when you look at it, it's like anything, you know, they can fine them $50,000. If they don't have it, they're not going to pay it. And so I don't expect that we will ever see 50% of the restitution he even ever made. I don't think we'll see it.
See, I seem to remember you growing up that if you were fined or you had to pay restitution, you stayed in jail and you worked that off until it was done. Am I wrong in this?
I don't know about that. Now, of course, I was incarcerated, so you make $23 a month. So it's going to be a long haul. Of course, there's another whole separate issue about having prisoners do labor for corporations. That's a whole nother
show. Yeah. No, I'm dead set against it, and I'm sure we could do a whole show on your experience, and we should someday.
Yeah. Yes, we should.
But, you know, the reality is, you know, I for some reason I always thought you had to. Finally, I want to, this is one of those things that I saw today, and I had to get your thoughts on. You know, we talked the other day about President Biden, you know, standing by Hunter with all of Hunter's problems, and look, Hunter's got some demons. Hunter's got some addiction problems. There's a lot going on there. And look, I think the family has been very supportive, and I think it's a model for maybe the rest of us to kind of go, hey, that's a good father there. I saw this story about Clarence Thomas, a couple stories about Clarence Thomas, but this one about the kid that that they raised basically as their own from the time he was 6 until he was 19. In fact, the kid that I guess Harlan Crowe paid for his private school education, along with a whole bunch of trips and a whole bunch of other stuff. But it was interesting that this report by the Business Insider Group said that this guy, who is the grandchild of Thomas's sister, evidently he's in jail right now on drug and weapons charges. And, you know, he's basically said that they cut him off. They basically ostracized, you know, Jenny and Clarence have basically just, you know, cut him off. He hasn't heard from them. They don't communicate with him. And it just seemed interesting, the difference between, you know, two families with kind of, I would argue, kind of similar problems.
Right. I don't know what happened, but when I read the comments of the young man who is Thomas's sister's grandchild, who the Thomases, you know, took in, when I read his comments, it was interesting. It wasn't a lash out of, hey, you two evil people, with Clarence and Ginny, but it was a sad comment of, you know, I barely heard from them, et cetera. And it was a loneliness you could tell, and a sadness in the young man's voice. And look, you know, I was incarcerated, and you want contact, you want your family, you want, it should be encouraged more than the prison system allows it now, because they have some restrictions that are idiotic, but you know, you can call and get on a phone list and write and send things. So I don't know where it went wrong, but yes, it's a stark contrast now with the, you know, with the president's family. Mrs. Biden, first lady, went to the trial, and then of course the president's made you know, statements, you know, about his son. So it shows support, because when you're going through prison or addiction, you need support. Now, you don't need to be enabled. Nobody does, but you need support.
Yeah, it just seemed interesting to me that you know, and I guess, you know, on the conservative side, there's this idea of tough love, and you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, and that kind of mentality. I guess if I had to make a justification for it, that might be it. But I'm sorry, it doesn't make sense to me.
Well, but again, from somebody who has, you know, I've been incarcerated, I would get letters from recovery groups, not letters, little cards, and they would just sign their names. Now, some of it was funny, you know, learn jujitsu, Bob, things like that. But they would send these little cards, you know. And of course, my family came up, and then there's commissary money, putting some money on the books, you know, as we call it. But the contact was important, because you can go into these facilities, and a lot of people have become mentally ill, a form of mental illness from being incarcerated. So you do need support. I used to hear guys on the phone saying, hey, please, can you put $2 on my books? And they're talking to like cousins of theirs who won't do it. And it's not just money, but you know, you need the cards, the letters, the calls, or whatever. Yeah. How it went wrong with them, I don't know. But when I read the young man's comment, it wasn't a complete lash out, which he could have done, but he made it very clear. Yeah. You know, he was disappointed, and he was sad over it. And it's not even explained why it got to that point.
Yeah, and you know, look, you maybe Clarence should reach out, find out what jail's like, because it seems to me there's a lot more to the Clarence Thomas you know, stuff that meets the eye. In fact, another report just came out that there are more undisclosed private jet trips that Harlan Crowe played for Clarence Thomas. And you go, you know, how much more of this keeps coming up before we start going, maybe we need some oversight, maybe we need some parameters for these folks to work within?
Well, Dick Durbin, Senator Durbin from Illinois, really crafted a perfect piece of ethics legislation. First of all, the court's not above people as human beings. and they should not have special privileges above any other judge or member of Congress when it comes to the ethics standards. But Durbin crafted something that was a softball in the sense of, here's the process the Chief Justice can look at. The Chief Justice with the court brings up the ideas, basically, of how to institute these rules. Now, somebody had to push him because Roberts is doing nothing.
Right.
But it wasn't a, here's your ethics rules. Here's what you're going to do, 1, 2, 3, and 4. Durbin gave them options of what they want to do. How do you turn that down? Then on top of it, once, you know, the Republicans, Lindsey Graham made a big deal about it and stopped it. Once that happened, the story came out today, more jet trips. Thomas has had $4.2 million spent on him. He didn't account for the last two jet trips. Now, personally speaking, I took a trip to Scotland with Jack Abramoff, and I listed that trip, by the way, which technically my lawyer said you never should have listed it, but I listed that trip, and it was listed incorrectly. I understand, I admit it. Here's, you know, Thomas just not listing anything, and there's two more trips to it. And I'm sitting there going, what doesn't balance about this stuff? Why would a justice be different than anybody else?
Yeah. No, I mean, I look at Menendez is on trial for bribery. You know, how's this different? How is it different that a senator is going to be going to go on trial, potentially go to jail, and a Supreme Court justice? This looks like bribery to me.
He got so much from this part. Well, there's another guy too, but from Crow, just a ton of trips and resorts and Bali, Indonesia, you know, you name it. They lived high on the hog.
I got to tell you, I keep saying this. I need new friends.
Well, watch out. I had some powerful rich friends, okay? Watch out.
Warning accepted.
Warning.
Bob, I appreciate the time. Always great stuff. Thanks so much.
You too.
Our good friend Bob. He's right. You know, be careful what you ask for. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Quick break, right back to wrap things up. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1921. During that summer, the battle waged over the efforts to unionize the southwestern West Virginia coal mines. The miners had been evicted from their company homes and had established tent colonies. One was located at Lick Creek. On this fateful day, state police and company gun thugs raided the Lick Creek camp. The police claimed that members of the tent colony had been shooting at strikebreakers. They arrested 56 men and destroyed the tents and furniture in the camp. One striker was shot down and killed. Later that summer, at their convention in Matewan, West Virginia, the delegates of the United Mine Workers of America adopted a resolution condemning the action. The attack on the tent colony was included in a list of grievances against the mine owners. It described the attack as one of the most brutal murders ever committed in the history of our state by the state police and deputies. Composed of the Baldwin Felts detectives was the attack on the Lick Creek tent colony on June 14, 1921, in which our brother, Alex Breadlove, willfully murdered by the state police while his hands were uplifted and begging for God to have mercy on his soul. The resolution went on to condemn the atrocities against the miners and demand the federal government and governor of West Virginia to restore law to the local police forces. The resolution was sent to the President of the United States, West Virginia's Governor Morgan, and the officials of the American Federation of Labor. It was also sent to Labor and other newspapers. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So Donald Trump evidently floated the idea of an all tariff policy. We're going to get rid of all income taxes, and they're going to charge tariffs on everything. And my mind goes, where did he pull the, which orifice did he pull this out of? Now, again, do I think he's serious? No. Because I don't think he thinks this through. I think he may have saw this on a cereal box. I don't know what kind of cereal you'd be eating to see something crazy like this. But, this then becomes, I'm going to throw something out because it's going to get some attention. And, you know, as Bob said, you know, the reality is Donald Trump is the master at getting attention. And this idea that no attention, whether it's good or bad, doesn't matter. Just as long as people are saying your name. No such thing as bad PR. Because there is that thought process out there that, you know, even if you're saying bad things about me, you're still talking about me. And that's what I want. So when he throws this stuff out, he knows people are going to chase this down. You do know now there are going to be a slew of stories on the possibilities that we're going to replace all income tax with tariffs and how wonderful it's going to be. And you do know there are think tanks right now gaming this out to spin this to curry favor with him. You know it. And I don't think it's possible. I don't think it's even possible to get done, because again, you would have to pass that through our dysfunctional legislative branch, and then it would have to hold muster through our dysfunctional Supreme Court. It's kind of amazing when you look at when conservatism touches something, generally breaks it. Kind of broken in this moment. Now, do I think tariffs are important? Yes, I do think targeted tariffs are important. I do think it is a carrot and stick kind of approach. I do think we do need to protect domestic industry. I'm a big supporter of domestic production for domestic consumption. We should be building what we need and use, absolutely, without question. But this idea that we're going to build a moat basically around the country, that's a bridge too far. It's a bit off the beaten path. But am I surprised by it? No, not at all. And I don't know what craziness will come out tomorrow. And that I got to tell you, is no way to run a lemonade stand, let alone the most powerful democracy on the planet, while we still are somewhat of a democracy, while we still believe that, you know, maybe possibly we the people have some say before we dive right into full-on fascism. Because understand, the globe is moving to the hard right, and we're following along. And a lot of it has to do with racism. A lot of it has to do with homophobia and misogyny and all that stuff. Yes, absolutely. But it also has to do with the fact that corporate America and global corporations have gotten so powerful that they can make your life miserable. And this is the thing we never really talk about, how much power we have given these big behemoth corporations globally and how much influence they have over our daily lives. Anyway, I love people who think that, you know, Joe Biden can flip a switch and it's his fault for inflation, that his policies are what caused this. And I've said before, look, economies are good and bad during administrations, and a lot of it has nothing to do with the person in the White House. A lot of it has to do with getting out of the way. Like, for instance, if it's me right now and I'm Joe Biden, I'm going after the Fed chair for not lowering interest rates, which he should have done, because inflation is coming down. In fact, May had a sizable reduction. You're seeing grocery prices coming down. You're seeing, you know, some of the anger and some of the stuff that's been out there, you know, finally moving the needle a little bit. But I'd be out there slamming my fist on the table, doing something, going, you know, Fed chair, you got to do something. You want to talk about how we could heat up this economy? That's one way. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. You like the idea? Tariffs on everything coming into the country, and that's how we pay for the things that we need? I don't think it's possible, but I'm sure there will be stories. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.